Hello, this is Beth Ludwig from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from the April edition of Good Housekeeping magazine. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Our first article is called When Friendships Fray, How to Work Things Out and When to Call It Quits by Betsy Rappaport. Greg and I have theater tickets. The curtain goes up in 2 hours and the sitter just canceled. Karen yelped over the phone. All names in this article have been changed because I need all the friends I can get. Do you think Lucia and Helen can sleep over? I know this is last minute, but we're really stuck. With my husband Ken out of town, our 2 young kids due in Hebrew school early the next morning, and a nagging head cold, I plan to turn in early, not supervise 4 kids under the age of 8. But we were talking $300 worth of tickets, and Karen's first date night since Y2K. Plus, she was a friend. Bring them over, I told her. You're a lifesaver, Karen gushed. Oh, and could you drop the girls off here tomorrow morning? In retrospect, that was strike one. Strike two came when Karen was an hour late for a 2-family dinner at our house. No phone call. Then showed up toting a piece of raw fish. Mind if I cook this up real quick for Helen? She said apologetically. She won't eat lasagna. Strike three was Halloween. For 3 years, our daughters had trick-or-treated together while we moms wielded the flashlights. Planning went on for weeks. That Halloween night, I walked Katie up to Karen's door and rang the bell. Out came little Lucia and a babysitter. Karen had made other plans without bothering to call me. I was still seething when I told Ken the story hours later. You're done, he pronounced. You don't have room in your life for that kind of friend. Was he right? How do you know when to end a strained friendship? Truly epic betrayals are easy call. You slept with my husband, stole my identity, and went to Rio. Told the book group my credit score. Okay, it's over. With certain kinds of friends, though, it can be hard to figure out when to move on. Consider the following common situations. The fadeaway friend. The dirt cheap apartment in the iffy neighborhood, that $25 crushed velvet couch from the Salvation Army, those weepy Chardonnay-fueled chats about treacherous boyfriends. You and Franny shared every significant 20-something milestone. Then the inevitable, career crisis, significant others, separate roofs, you got married first, things haven't been the same since. Now in your 30s, your duets have become solo acts. Should you try to reconnect or just let the friendship go? The psychodrama friend. Her awful boss, the evil co-workers, the endless fights with hubby. At first, Sandra's technicolor tales of woe were a welcome relief when your own life was a little bit beige. And now that crow's feet have etched themselves around your eyes, sometimes a trip back to middle school can be revitalizing. Certain crises require full attention, no matter what. The flunked mammogram, the death of a parent, a child's illness. But the fifth time you find yourself holding Sandra's hand telephonically while she sobs out her sorrow about her daughter's failure to get an A, which will surely limit her college options in 7 years, you hang up feeling as if you've donated a couple of pints. Is it time to get your psychodrama fix from a fictional desperate housewife? The flake factor friend. Your kid's on the phone. Mommy, Darren's mom forgot to pick us up. You glance at the clock. Maggie was supposed to fetch the boys an hour ago. Wait right there, honey, you tell your son. I'll come get you in 5 minutes. You grit your teeth as you careen down your driveway. How many after-school pickups has Megan missed? How many times has you had to rescue that lunch because she totally forgot about that conference call, the soccer game, her dentist appointment, the dog shots? She's also serially late, so you give her a fake earlier start time for the dinner or the movie because you know she'll be running at least half an hour late. Has the clock run out of this friendship? The one-upmanship mate. Mara brings the most exquisite composed salad to your end-of-school-year barbecue and sets down the hand-painted Tuscan platter next to your three-bean mix you decanted from a Costco drum. You found a great camp for your kids. She's so happy for you. But did you know that her kids' camp has horseback riding and a ropes course? You get her holiday card, complete with a gorgeous family photo and snappy newsletter in rhyming couplets, before you have even finished the Thanksgiving leftovers. When you both volunteer to help the kids with their crafts at school, Mara steps in afterwards to fix your less-than-perfect efforts. Once again, she's going for a first-place finish in a race you didn't even know you entered. Game over or game on? The TMI friend. You've only known each other for a few months, and already your coffee dates with Michelle are a highlight of your week. This time, though, out pours not only a latte, but more info than you need. Her husband, Kevin, is driving them to bankruptcy with his addiction to pricey phone sex, the nature of which Michelle spells out in squirming details. For an hour, you really didn't want to hear that. And you really, really have no idea how to act when Kevin walks in through the door, cheerfully greeting you. Is this all too much? The parallel playmate. When small children contently hang out side by side without interacting, psychologists call it parallel play. That's what you've been doing with your dearest friend. You adore each other, you think of each other all the time, and you imagine you're in the same sandbox, but your regular girls' night out has been replaced by quick Facebook updates. If you can't even find a time to see a movie, how will you keep this friendship strong? When any friendship runs into trouble, it's an opportunity to re-examine its place in your life. Do you feel you get as much out of it as you put in? Is your investment of time, energy, affection yielding dividends? Is it growing in a way that continues to reflect who you are? Having a community of friends, some best, some peripheral, will help you not to overact to the limitations of any one friend, says psychologist Harriet Lerner, author of The Dance of Anger. When we depend on one person to meet all our needs, she can't help but disappoint us. And when she does, it needn't be a big deal or a deal breaker. Not everything has to be talked about. It's often an act of maturity to lighten things up and let it go. Lerner says, friendships go through cycles of closeness and distance, and we don't have to try to process everything. We can recognize the limitations of any one friend and not take everything personally. Not take things personally, so crazy, it just might work. Psychologist Judith Seals, author of The Comfort Trap, or What If You're Riding a Dead Horse, points out that intense friendships are often altered by status changes, such as marriage, baby, divorce, moving away. We may neglect friends during the early Velcro stage of a romantic relationship, or when family or work consumes our time and energy, or they may neglect us. If we can learn to feel comfortable hanging out in the peripheral for a while, a distant friend may move closer over time. Even if there's been a big blow-up, Sills advises, take the longer view. She thought you were a bridezilla. You thought she was totally selfish and an unsupportive maid of honor. Whatever you do, don't write a letter expressing your feelings. Here are the 7 ways you broke my heart on my wedding day. Eventually, she'll get married, go through her own craziness, and understand yours. You'll look back and marvel at how upset you got over boutonnieres. Time passes and you resume, Sill says. Later in life, like accordions, those relationships can snap back together. If you let friendships do, be living and breathing things. What was a penny ante friendship in your 20s can become sterling silver in your 30s and solid gold by the time you reach your 40s and 50s. But sometimes you don't want to wait. You need to act, either to patch things up or move on for both parties' sakes. When you're dealing with a drama queen or a flake, you might want to try taking the annoying side of her personality more in stride. The core of friendship is that it's not all things to all people all the time. If your flaky friend provides warmth, companionship, loyalty, and great party ideas, but she's simply not reliable in carpool, you just don't carpool with her. Sales advocates emphasizing your own requirements. Tell her, I get stressed and anal when people are late, so I do better not making time dates with you, instead of pointing out her lateness. Let a TMI friend know your requirements too, before you decide the fault's all hers. Sales suggests make sure you've been clear about what you consider oversharing. Crossing your boundaries may be a deal breaker, but have you really established that boundary? You know you have if you've said to your friend three times, stop, that's way too much information. Clarity and boundary setting will also help you with the person who's always trying to one-up you. That kind of friend typifies how a lot of women handle competition. Men will say, I'm so totally going to beat you. They go all at it, and then they go out for a drink. Women are afraid of competing openly, so we sneak it out in a snarky remarks and contest. Instead of inviting defensiveness by pointing out your friend's one-upmanship, she suggests being straightforward about what you want for her. I really need to brag about my kid, and you need to promise me that you'll give me 30 seconds. Protecting and preserving a friendship requires face time, even when life's frantic. Friendships matter deeply for women, Lerner says. It sustains and nourishes us. It's good to nurture your friendships before a crisis hits, and the universe sends you in a crash course in how much we need each other. I learned this firsthand last year when surgery sidelined me, and the dearest friends I never see often enough immediately formed a dinner train. That steady stream of delicious meals and the reminder of preciousness of friendships nourished me through my convalescence. There are, of course, times when you really should head for the exit. You've made an honest effort to communicate what you need, but your friend doesn't respond, or your caring and loyalty aren't being reciprocated. It makes no sense to keep hanging out in a friendship where we feel diminished, misunderstood, or unfairly treated, Lerner says, or where we try to heal the problem and our attempts to make things better go nowhere. But in most cases, it seems, friendships benefit from the mellowing gift of time. Does a friendship have to be terminated, or can it live with less emotional freight? Asks Sills. Can you enjoy the positive and tolerate the negative? That's something we do better as we get older. Should I try to fix what was broken with Karen? When tension or distance persist in a close relationship, says Lerner, it makes sense to find some ways to address it. If a feeling of disconnect or superficiality or anger or hurt settles in the air like a thick fog, you can talk to the person without criticism or blame and without pressuring or pursuing her for closeness. Give someone the benefit of your anger. We're not name-calling here. We go through these dialogues in our heads. And then, can you believe she did this? We're making a case. The other person, remarkably, doesn't know the case. Could Karen have been oblivious to how hurt and angry I was? So I picked up the phone to call her. Now for our question in our good food section, the Ask Susan column. Here's the question. What's the best way to store opened wine? Here's Susan's answer. If you're going to drink the rest within a day or two, simply recork it and store it at the temperature at which it's normally served, in the fridge for white room temperature, away from heat and light for wet red. Exposure to oxygen makes the aroma and the flavor of wine deteriorate. So if you want to keep it longer, pour the leftovers into a smaller bottle. A clean glass screw-top beer or soda bottle will do nicely. Fill it right to the top, cap tightly. The less air space, the longer the wine will continue to taste good, and store in the fridge. Both reds and whites will keep for up to 2 weeks for use in cooking. Our next article is called Double Identity. My college nickname held more history than I realized, by Deborah Darvik. 20 years ago, I changed my name. Nothing too radical, from Debbie to Deborah. But it was a step I had wanted to take for years. At the time, I was swimming in Debbie's, Deb's, and a Debbie or two. I'd go to the doctor. When the nurse called out, "Debbie," four of us stood up. When I hit 30, that was it. I was old enough to choose the name I'd answer to, Deborah, my given name. I couldn't wait to shed the perky diminutive that had stuck to me like cotton candy all those years. If I introduced myself and someone said, "Hello, Debbie," they were corrected swiftly and firmly. My children have never known me as Debbie. I don't even know myself as Debbie anymore. Then three college friends and I got together. No one knows you like your college friends do. We slip into conversation as seamless as we used to bop into one another's dorm rooms 30 years ago. Sometimes they forget and call me Debbie. I usually let it go, reluctant to exercise self-assertion when there's so much else to talk about. Our lives have taken different paths. One of us never married, one married late. One entered a convent and subsequently left to marry and raise a family. I, the wild woman who swore she'd never wed, was the first to walk down the aisle. We come together to celebrate the purchase of Donna's first home, a beautiful 1920s colonial with hardwood floors and handmade tile in the foyer. She worked hard to reach this milestone, and we were reveling in the freshly painted rooms. We went out for pizza, drank wine, talked hormone replacement therapy, and college admission essays. As undergrads, we kept the book. In it, we wrote everything that happened to us, late nights and early mornings, crushes and breakups. We wrote poetry and sob stories, jokes and protest. Tucked inside its pages were spent corsages, a photo of Paul Newman, and a sketch someone on our hall did of us. Way in the back was a letter from my father assuring me that I would indeed find a job after graduation. I brought it home to show my daughter, now in the throes of her own job hunt. The book has become our reunion's fifth member, silent keeper of our younger selves, the looking glass that preserved the way we were. Each of us took a turn reading aloud the hysterical pages, appalled at our raunchiness. We all wrote something new, adding another ring of life to this oak of a diary. That weekend, my friends used my nickname, but it no longer nicked my self-image. I welcomed the sound of it and memories of a time devoted to swim meets, play practice, and all-nighters. They called me Debbie, returning to me a self I treasure, something wonderful to meet once again. Checking In, A Mother and Daughter on the Threshold of Possibility, by Frances Lefkowitz. I'd been living on the East Coast for a decade when I finally talked my mother into letting me buy her a plane ticket to visit me. Before this, she simply hadn't had the means, financial or emotional, to make the 3,000-mile journey from California. My mom grew up poor, and as a single parent, she brought me up with the same cautious mindset. Not by design, but by habit. I was making good money now, so I hoped we could break some old habits together. The highlight of her visit was a long drive we took one day to the Emily Dickinson Museum in Amherst, Massachusetts. My mother had put herself through college after she had kids and was now working as an elementary school teacher's aide. She studied Dickinson, finding a sisterhood of a kind with quiet, passionate poet, and she had passed her reverence on to me, so we were both giddy when we arrived in Amherst. The afternoon was muggy, headed toward a thunderstorm. After strolling the gardens, we joined the house tour, lagging behind the guide, so we could inspect the table where Dickinson ate, the narrow bed where she slept, the desk, surprisingly small, where she wrote her poems. We lingered in her bedroom till we got kicked out, then wandered around town and had a bite to eat. It was dark when we got into the highway, And then the storm struck, with loud cracks and pounding rain. The visibility was miserable, and I'd become exhausted and cranky from doing all the driving. Suddenly, my mother said in a hesitant voice, "Well, we passed a billboard a few miles back that advertised rooms for $45. I had to keep my eyes on the road, but glanced at her briefly as she turned to me, and we both saw the same half-smile in the face staring back. Staying in a hotel was something we never did, an extravagance, like champagne flutes that only other people could afford. My mother understood that to be poor means living in denial in most of the literal sense. You say no to yourself constantly. Even if you get a good job and a decent savings account, it's still a struggle to convince yourself that you're entitled to have what other people have. $45 for two people, that's not really much," I said. "It's not," she agreed. "Of course, there's tax on top of that," I said. "Still, maybe there's a AAA discount." We drove a few more miles, adjusting to the idea that we could be like those people who take summer vacations and make hotel reservations. It was as if a window had opened and sent in a breeze, and we didn't know if we should luxuriate in this fresh air or slam the window shut. Soon we were pulling off at a gas station, finding a payphone and calling information with only a vague idea of the name of the hotel my mother had seen. We got a number that got us a room with access to an indoor pool, swimsuits, and yes, a discount too. With newfound audacity, we giggled all the way to the front desk, down the hall, and into our room where we changed into our suits and then went splashing in the pool. We were teaching each other how to say yes. Good housekeeping taste test. Yellow cake mix. Baking a cake from scratch is a labor of love, time-consuming, multi-stepped, fraught with potential disasters. Will it rise properly, stay moist, taste delicious? Boxed cake mixes are a speedier, more convenient alternative. But you need to know which ones will create made-like-mom layers. We fired up our ovens, then baked and forked up 11 nationally available yellow cake mixes to find the tastiest. Read on to see which of them takes the proverbial cake. First place, the tasters loved King Arthur Flour Golden Vanilla Cake Mix. It costs $5 and makes 2 9-inch rounds. It won for its not-too-sweet homemade flavor with a hint of maple, although some found the texture to be a tad dry. So the first place winner was King Arthur Flour Golden Vanilla Cake. Honorable mention. While some participants felt that Betty Crocker's Super Moist Golden Vanilla Cake Mix at $1.85, and it makes 2 9-inch rounds, had a slightly artificial vanilla flavor, most gave it high marks for its light and fluffy texture and buttery, well-balanced flavor. So the second one was Betty Crocker Super Moist Golden Vanilla Cake. And the third one was one of the few that actually called for butter. Duncan Hines Moist Deluxe Butter Recipe Golden Premium Cake Mix. It's $1.65 per box, and it also makes 2 9-inch rounds. It came in third for its light, moist texture. Were it not for its buttered, popcorn-like flavor and the way it stuck in the pan, it might have scored higher. So the third winner was Duncan Hines Moist Deluxe Butter Recipe Golden Premium Cake Mix. Here is Good Housekeeping Tips, 7 Ways to Waste Less. First, buy refillable containers. Spray bottles, for example, can be refilled from larger jugs or concentrate. Over time, you'll buy and dispose of fewer containers. Number 2, choose concentrated or ultra cleaning products. which use 50 to 60% less packaging than traditional formulas, while they clean just as well. Step 3. Don't use more product than the directions indicate. Pouring in extra laundry detergent or fabric softener won't get your clothes any cleaner or cuddlier. Instead, follow the directions on the label. 4. Stop brown bagging it, literally, and wasting paper when you pack lunch. Try reusable lunch boxes, such as one from L.L. Bean. Next, grab a microfiber cloth, which can take the place of 60 rolls of paper towels before it needs replacing. 6, stash leftovers in reusable containers. Our Good Housekeeping Research Group tested top picks. 1 was plastic Rubbermaid lockets for portability. And the last tip to waste less, green your next move with reusable plastic crates, which mean no more dozens of cardboard boxes to tape up and try to get rid of later. Here's how to green your ride. 1, slow down. Driving 10 miles per hour above 60 is like adding nearly 50 cents to the price of the gallon of gas. Get pumped. Once a month, check the pressure of each tire against the guidelines listed on your car's manual and add air if needed. Doing this will improve your mileage by 3%. Air out. Replace filters regularly. A new oxygen sensor alone can improve mileage by as much as 15%. Another good housekeeping tip, chew on this. When you need a quick fix for bad breath, there's no need to spring for pricey breath sweetening gum in a head-to-head competition. An ordinary sugary brand reduced smelling sulfur containing compounds, as well as the gum containing xylitol and zinc. That's what on the market is a breath freshener. But the clear winner for your wallet is not specialty gum. It's regular gum. It's less than 10 cents per piece compared to 25 cents per piece for the fancy kind. All gums, regular, sugar-free, or breath freshening, work by stimulating saliva production. This is from the Academy of General Dentistry. Here are 10 tips for heart-healthy cooking. Tip 1, choose low-fat or fat-free, reduced-fat, or light dairy products. Tip 2. Canned goods are often loaded with salt. Use no-salt-added canned products or reduce sodium, such as pasta sauces. 3. Use high-sodium ingredients like cheese and olives lightly. 4. Make recipes or egg dishes with egg whites instead of egg yolks. Substitute 2 egg whites for each egg yolk. 5. Use cuts of red meat and pork labeled loin and round, as they usually have the least fat. To cut fat and cholesterol even further, make veggie burgers. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode from Soups to Nuts. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Beth Ludwig, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long, until next time.